Good morning, everybody. On March 23rd, 2022, my name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks so much for listening. Got my friends here from Fielding International. We're going to talk about different paradigms, different models in school design for thriving learners. And there's really some interesting stuff. These guys are professional school designers. They're architects. They're educators. They bring that together. And a lot about equity and access and social-emotional learning and dealing with kids today has to do with the space in which they learn. All right, it's key stuff, so that's why I love having Randy on today, Randy Fielding, and also Nathan Stringy, who is, they've both been here before, and we're going to have a nice conversation with them. We're going to archive the show at ace-ed.org. All of our shows are over there. Everyone we've done for many, many years, you can check it out. All right, under the podcast icon, check out what we're doing in teacher retention under our professional learning icon. You can also go to teacher-retention.com. teacher-retention.com. This is a very worrisome challenge these days, as so many of you wonderful educators are thinking of leaving, okay? We're very concerned about that. So please check out what we're doing over there. We're just so important to everything we do. And also check out our other website, which is called all about social emotional learning, which is called seltoday.org, and you can link to it all at ace-ed.org. And without further ado, let me bring on what I hope is my dynamic duo working together, because I only have one number in. Randy, are you there?
I'm here, Larry. Hello this morning. I'm feeling social and I'm getting emotional. It's exciting to hear all the things you're talking about.
Thanks, pal. I appreciate that. There's a lot going on out there, and you know, we try to get the word out on everything. Is Nathan with you?
I sure am, Larry. We're here in the same room. We're just kicking it here in Minneapolis, having a good time.
There you go. And I just only had the one line open and two guests. I wanted to make sure you guys are both together. Okay. Randy is the founding partner of Fielding International. We know that because his last name is Fielding. He spent a lifetime working to transform education. It's amazing, through design and architecture. And Nathan is a senior learning designer at Fielding International, which is named after Randy. Okay. And he was an innovative teacher, school founder, helps communities align their educational programs and their learning environment, and that's what we're talking about. And I've got several links up on site as you're listening, schoolpatterns.com, all right, and also a link to an article we're going to talk about. We're going to start there about spatial paradigms, spatial models for schools, a conventional paradigm, a thriving paradigm is what you call it. Talk about your article. It was in Getting Smart, and again, it's linked over here on the website. All right, Randy, why don't you start? Or is it Nathan? Nathan wrote the article.
Actually, Nathan? This one's going to be Nathan's start, but I will chime in. Don't worry, Larry, I'm all in. So, Larry, the Getting Smart article that really juxtaposed the conventional paradigm and the thriving paradigm, I'd been wanting to write that for many years. My background as a teacher, I was always in a classroom that was isolated from my peers. It really created limitations for some of the things I would have loved to do around interdisciplinary learning, around more project, more active learning. And the thing is, I think so many teachers I've come to understand are so inside of that model, that paradigm, that it's actually hard to imagine something different. And so with my time with Randy, who is really this, you know, pioneer, this person who has thought so much around what schools could be spatially and how we can create diversity of spaces that are really going to adapt to the unique needs of kids and adults, I felt I needed to put my educator lens on and write in very simple language what are the key shifts, the key transformations from what schools have been designed for much of the last 50, 60, 70 years into what Randy and I talk about spatially, what we call the thriving paradigm. And so I wanted to create a document that really showed this in really plain language what some of those key transformations were. And that's the shift from the conventional paradigm to the thriving paradigm.
And I want to ask you something, the way you started this, Nathan. Okay, you said, you know, and I know you were a teacher, and you felt constrained, which is great considering the profession you're in. Okay, you felt constrained by the the size and closed offness of the classroom you had. And you know, as you think back on that, okay, and you said you would love to have done more interdisciplinary and all that. When did that really dawn on you? And this is an interesting question. You're an ex-teacher. How'd you find Randy Fielding in the gang? Okay,
yeah,
because obviously
there's two questions there. First, I think I knew about 2 weeks into teaching that I could see it in the faces of the kids in my ninth grade class. They didn't know why they were there. In many cases, they were just being shoved from one classroom to another. They had 45 minutes in this class, and a bell rang, and they moved
that
to the next class. There was so little agency. Though I could create some pretty cool experiences within my little 45-minute math block, and I could undo a lot of the damage I had seen in their previous learning experiences, but it was so isolated, and there was so little agency, and there was so little autonomy. Kids didn't really have a say in where they were going to learn, what they were going to learn, how they were going to learn, and the limitations of the four, you know, walls in my, you know, 30 by 30 classroom really created so many barriers for what we could do, how we could create really authentic, relevant learning experiences that were really much more vibrant, much more aligned with what kids needed, and also what I as a teacher needed, to feel less isolated, feel like I could create a place of wellness and a place of movement and a place of activity and a place that I could have a small group working over here and I could be working one-on-one with a kid over here. It's really hard to do that really multiple modes of instruction and learning and teaching inside conventional classrooms. It's possible, but there's so many barriers. As I was going through the school creation process, that just opened in 2021, it was an 8-year ramp to open that school. I'm really proud of it. It's called Exploration High School here in Minnesota, in Minneapolis. But I met Randy in 2017 going through that process, and the moment that I was introduced to him and I saw the work he was doing around recreating and reimagining spaces that really aligned with what schools wanted to do, with what teachers needed, with what kids desired, I was transfixed, and I started consulting with Fielding back in 2018, and then I moved full-time a couple years later. And it's just, it's such powerful work. I can't even describe
it. Is.
Hour
it
of
is.
Space. And I don't think most educators, most teachers realize how impactful changing the learning environment can be. And that's why I created this paradigm of juxtaposition between conventional and thriving, just so you could understand the key transformations from one to the other.
Yeah, it's really a fascinating little journey you took, okay? And most people, when they – this is interesting, I think, with teachers – I mean, I'm only speaking for myself, but most teachers, if I may, and I'm not being derogatory here because I was the same way, felt that their classroom was their kingdom. And you open those doors, you know, you open those doors, and that's fine, okay? But you open those doors between classrooms – okay, and suddenly you start working together and collaborating on more of a regular scale, a regular thing, okay, and it opens up a whole new world, but we were never taught to think that way, okay? I don't think there's I may be wrong, but I don't think there's a course when you're a teacher in classroom design and you're in college.
No.
Okay?
Never seen anything like that.
I've never seen anything like it. Okay, and so therefore, that's what I was saying, Nathan, for you to have these ideas and really think about it when you were a teacher and then suddenly to be able to put it into effect, I think that's really, really cool. I really do. You were lucky, Randy, to find him. Where'd you get one of these?
It's like
two whales swimming in the Mariana Trench. Like, you know, how can you find each other? You know, that's amazing.
Yeah, and it's a real pleasure to be able to work shoulder to shoulder with them. It's a face-to-face relationship. We work side by side. We often take walks down to Lake Biddy McCaskill, which is just 5 blocks away, and we have events here. So we're hosting Hip Hop Genius 2.0 in just a couple of months from now, which is, there's a book. It's about High School for Recording Arts, one of our favorite
It's a great place. I interviewed them.
The second edition is coming out in or just came out a decade later, and so we're going to host that, and we'll have 70 or 80 people here, and that's something that Nathan has been very involved with. It's just building local community, that global community, that connection, like we have the chance to do with you and your listeners today, Larry, but also that local community was so important for change.
Yeah, not just today. A lot of people listen to our archives. This will go on for months and months and months. Every show we do does that. Okay, the joy of podcasting. They can listen whenever they want, listen once or twice. You know, it's interesting. You called this. I'm going to get back to Nathan here. You called this, Nathan, in your article, the two spatial paradigms, and I love this. Okay, a conventional paradigm for classroom design, school design, and a thriving paradigm. Okay, and obviously you must like the thriving more than the conventional. Okay, just by the virtue of their names. Am I right or wrong here?
Yeah, you're right. And in the article on Getting Smart, where I really kind of talk about each of the paradigms, and there's nothing evil about the conventional paradigm. It rose out of a need.
No.
And so there, I don't want to cast a negative light on the conventional paradigm. It's by far the most predominant way. If you go into a school, you're going to see most of the elements in the school are from the conventional spatial paradigm.
Right.
What we're seeing now is misalignments between what schools want to do now and in the future. And when we talk about, future skills or the future of learning, the future of work, so many of them align with our thriving paradigm. And so as schools want to be more relevant in the 21st century and beyond, we think that the learning environment can be a key catalyst for making and aligning those spaces for their learning goals.
You think so, and I think so, too. Does the world of education understand that these days? And maybe I'll ask Randy that one.
All right.
Did I wake you, Mr. Fielding?
I was looking for that question about contrast between the conventional spatial paradigm and the thriving paradigm.
You can still do that one if you want, but I'm curious, the way you guys think, okay, guys and gals over there, okay, it's terrific, and it's future-oriented. And you're looking to design things for now and for the future, okay? But that's hard to convince people. And education in terms of design, okay, which is unfortunate in many cases, is a little bit behind. It's just a little bit behind. And so when you want to go in there and make these great changes for the future, do you find that they go, oh, yeah, wow, this is the way to go? You're right. Where are we on that scale these days? Randy.
Mm-hmm. Well, that saying, necessity is the mother of invention. So we might be approaching a tipping point for change. Nathan and I were just at a conference 10 days ago for the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, and we looked at some hard research on what school principals are most worried about right now, and overwhelmingly it was about mental health. It was so far off the charts, all concerned and not really having a strong way forward on how to do this. There aren't enough social workers, they couldn't afford to hire enough of them. Training teachers to be able to help with mental health is a good model. But teachers are already busy and somewhat overwhelmed. And so when we look at that and we look at what are our solutions, we can give some training to teachers so that they can be a little more like social workers. That's good. We need to do that. But then we look at the power of space. What could we do, something we could change that would improve mental health now, which we desperately need everywhere? And you look at this switch in paradigm, and we have a key part of the solution right there. So if we look at that old classroom paradigm where you said, hey, teachers are the king of their classroom, you said that's okay. Well, it apparently is not okay for kids' mental health. When we're inside classrooms and teachers and kids are isolated, it creates this relationship of the teacher is the king, and the teacher
kingdom.
It isn't giving kids what they need today. That for one thing, that relationship with the teacher, if you happen to have a great relationship with that teacher, great, you look back for the rest of your life and remember that teacher you had at that time. But not all of us connect with all our teachers at all the time. But if you contrast that to a thriving spatial paradigm, a learning community, one where you have these fluidly connected spaces, you have learning studios, which are an updated version of classrooms, but there's also the possibility to open those up, either with sliding doors or overhead doors to a common area, and there's visual transparency, and connect to might be 3, 4, 5 other teachers, and it could be 100, 120 other kids. You now have this opportunity to be in that individual classroom, that quieter space, or you can have some student autonomy. You can be outside there, meet your needs in a different way, and you have other kids that you can connect with. And you have a lower level of visual, lower level of supervision. You have some visual supervision, but you have access now to 4 or 5 teachers who are all connecting from their learning studios to that learning commons. And that changes everything. That learning commons is going to have some cave spaces in it. It's going to have some soft furniture, some project tables. So you get the opportunity to meet your needs for what's important to you now. And it's a big shift. The classroom is very limited in its spatial constraints, and also the relationship constraints. So now I have an opportunity. For example, I was a student who wanted to get out of the classroom most of the time. I was waiting for recess.
Yeah.
I was looking out the window, but I couldn't. I had to sit in a chair. But to be able to go out freely and still have visual supervision, so we've still got safety, that's a complete shift right there.
Let me ask you, and I was talking to a school district yesterday. I won't say where, but it's a fairly large school district. And they're having a terrible time with discipline, especially in these post-COVID days. Just a terrible time. And I asked them if it was where the discipline challenge was. And they said, well, it starts in elementary and it's worse in the high school. All right? And I'm curious, and this is a great thing to talk about today, as you guys develop these, if I may, more open class, more open learning environments, I don't want to say classroom, okay, what are you finding in terms of discipline? Is it I would think the first thought is, oh, well, it would be impossible to control. It's just too wide open. But by the same token, I'm thinking this is probably what kids need, okay? They're not feeling as constrained, okay? And, you know, those emotions can roll on out. What are you hearing as you design schools with disciplinary challenges and this in regards to your thriving and conventional paradigms? And I'll throw that one to Nathan, and you can throw it back on Randy if you want.
Yeah, I think a lot of any approach to discipline needs to look at what are the roots of the discipline problems. And so many of the discipline problems I have seen in schools is, one, a lack of relationships, and secondly, what are the ways that teachers are able to build those relationships within the school spaces? And I think that's getting back to Randy's point is, if you have a bad relationship with your teacher and you're with that teacher for, you know, a long part of your day, and you have an inability to connect with other people because you're in that one space, that isolated space, it can just compound on itself.
Yeah, it does.
And
you're right.
And so I think that the ability to be in this learning community model, which is a key element, which is a key transformation from what we call the classroom-based approach to learning to the community-based approach to learning, which is one of the transformations in our from conventional to thriving, it allows for a much more organic, much more relationship-based, and getting back to that wellness piece as well.
Yeah,
people act out if they don't have their needs met, and if we're putting them in spaces, environments that are really constrained, where they don't have agency, where they're not able to connect with people, it's creating conditions where they're going to act out. Whereas when you put them in conditions where we're able to adapt to their unique set of needs and gifts and life circumstances, it's just there's so many more things that have to happen before discipline ever takes place. So it's really I would look at it more of a creating the environment where it's a preventative approach to discipline. You're in an environment that's really supportive. We call it the thriving paradigm because we've created a set of thriving elements that are aligned with our paradigm. And when those needs are met, when you have love and belonging, when you have curiosity and mastery, all of the other things that are in that thriving, in those thriving elements, discipline is not nearly as common as when you're put in a when you have zero agency, when you're in a place that you may not have a great relationship with the adult that is in charge of you. It's creating conditions where one is more likely to happen, one is less likely to happen.
I love that answer. I love that answer. That was great. And as you were talking, I was thinking, you know, we reach a boiling point, if I may use discipline and anger in that regard, okay? Mm-hmm. And the more wide open the pan is, so to speak, the less chance there is that it will boil and boil over. But a confined space, okay, it's much easier to get to that boiling point, much faster, okay? And you need that ability. I don't know if that's a good analogy or not, but you need that ability, okay, to widen that boiling pot, okay, so that it's dispersed over a lot of space, okay, and it cools it down. Okay, and makes it easier. Do you ever get the discipline question when you talk about this to administrators? Do they look at it that way at all? Randy?
Yes, yes, certainly. It's a common thing that they look at our designs and they say, very exciting, we love that, but our teachers didn't train that way, or
that's right.
We're afraid that some of our students might be distracted. It's too much freedom. It's too open. That pot you were
no, lack of control. It's a little bit of a lack of control, at least in the mind's eye.
Yeah. And I think what they need to do is really see it. They need to go to a place where it's working, and that's one of the most effective ways we have to lead change is to say, come and see a pilot project. Come and see a project that's already working, and that changes everything. So I think field trips are a great idea, and you tend to see it. Once people come and see a school that's working, they want to go see,
Your school's work. Yeah. Your school's work. Wait a minute. Can you use my boiling pot analogy? Did that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes.
I was gonna build on that. I think one of the key differentiators
Do that. Is that Nathan? Nathan, do that.
Yeah, I'm gonna look at that.
Please
do that. A key differentiator, and that is, it's getting away from the concept of open or closed. It's not open or closed. Like in the 70s, there was an open classroom movement where there were no walls, and it was a disaster. This is not that, and that's why being very clear in the language of the thriving paradigm is really about having a diversity of spaces, where you are able to go into a closed environment for, a whole group interaction. But then you're able to have passive supervision to a more open environment where you might have access to a calming retreat. In fact, we are just doing visioning with an elementary school in Ontario, Canada recently, and we asked kids before the engagement to draw a picture of environments that they love to learn. And one kid drew a peace garden, one kid drew a reading nook, but when we were able to talk with them, they so much wanted a calming retreat. And they even used the language, I need a time during the day when I just need to go and calm down. I need to self-regulate. And they were using that language. And they were so attuned to what their own needs were, but they were also aware that they have zero opportunity to do that in their current space. And so, and Randy can attest to this, a cave space or a calming retreat is one of the most common needs that both teachers and young people articulate again and again and again. And it's just not at all part of the conventional paradigm. It wasn't that idea of having an accessible place to go and have some semi-privacy to go relax, calm down, some soft seating, whatever it might be, just wasn't a part of the conventional paradigm. If they are in schools that are mostly in the conventional paradigm, they're usually in like a central corridor where they're really inaccessible that kids aren't able to go there when they need them. And so even if schools realize they want to do that and that is something that's being asked for, it's often actually implemented really ineffectively in schools.
Wow. It's all absolutely astounding. I want to harp on a word you used, and it's also used if anybody wants to go to on this article in Getting Smart. Again, it's linked on the website here. All right. And that's the word autonomy. And I think Nathan used that word earlier today, but it's also in the article. And when you say autonomy, you're referring, I believe, to the students. How do you use that word and define it in the way you want it defined in terms of a thriving classroom? Autonomy.
I'll take that one. Building on this conversation that you and Nathan were having a few minutes ago about how open it is, and you used the analogy of the open pot is less likely to boil over, and Nathan said it's not really how open it is. I would say related to that is this issue that movement is a key to autonomy. And it's not about being a big open space to move, but it's having this opportunity to get out of your chair and move. And that's part of autonomy. They've done careful studies that show if you have fixed seating, like you have in a prison, or about half of the cafeterias we have in the country, versus seating where it can be moved, people will approach the chair and they'll pull it a little bit. They'll move it to the left or right or close to them. And even if they leave it in approximately the same place, they want the autonomy to move that. Same thing with windows, operable windows, to go up to a window and open it, to go to a door and open it, or to have archways, for example, or connecting passages between spaces. So this idea of sitting in chairs closes us down. It tends to make us isolated. It shuts down half of who we are because we're not just a brain inside a skull. We have an integrated mind and body. So autonomy is so important that people are able to find their best selves, and that's rooted very much in their bodies and also in time. So when we look at studies on neuroscience, we find that there's cycles of learning, that most successful learning happens in cycles. So there may be a collaborative time. Maybe you're sitting or maybe we're talking here to you, Larry. And then there's another time that it's more individual. You go to a quieter place. For me, it's often walking. I do a lot of my best thinking and working while walking. Or it could be off. Nathan likes to put his headphones on. There's a sense of autonomy. And that's different for different people at different times of day. And then there's a time you may want to build something or definitely move around. And that could be an athletic activity. It could involve robotics. So we all need the autonomy to be able to respond to our own personal needs, our own biological needs, and our sense of when we're listening and connecting and when we're consolidating it and learning. And the current classroom model is sort of the opposite of that. And so having this thriving paradigm, which says that when instead of corridors, we have spaces where we can learn as we move between places, we can interact, and we have strong indoor-outdoor connections where we can go outside. We have enough visual transparency, so there is still a certain amount of visual supervision. It allows us to have that autonomy and allows us to feel whole and good. And one thing I'll add to that is that, you know, we're seeing that the future is really about purpose-based and problem-based learning. It's solving real-world problems, problems we may have in our family, in our community, in our own lives, problems we're experiencing personally, and that's the best way to really engage kids. And so if that's the case, really the key thing for teachers or coaches is to help kids figure out what those problems are that they want to solve and develop that autonomy. And so they learn early, what problems do I want to solve? And they can pursue that with passion. And the teacher's job is to help them get the skills they need, find the resources. And their peer's job is to help them find what they need to solve those problems. And that's autonomy, is really solving the problems that you want to.
To have a little bit of control of solving the problems. I got to say, when I use the phrase opening the classroom, whatever I said 10 minutes ago. I remembered that from the 1970s, and thank you. I think it was Nathan who said that wasn't what we were talking about, that open classroom theory, which was a pedagogy of some sort, I basically remember, okay, in the early 70s. And I didn't like it then. It became popular for a day and a half, and then it died out. Okay, so just a thought on that one. Okay, I have a philosophical question for you, because I agree with everything you said, Randy. Okay, over the course of time, what do you think we lost by doing, by constantly doing it the old way and putting the kids in rows and controlling kids and all that sort of stuff in individualized classrooms? Well, I mean, when you look at the philosophy of it, okay, and all that, what was the effect of that? I mean, we really see, I bet we lost a lot of creativity. And it was a time when people were supposed to go work on an assembly line. So you were disciplined to do that from minute one. And all of a sudden it changed. What do you think we lost, Randy?
Well, we lost.
If we did, if you think we lost
a lot
anything.
Of our most hopeful future. Our
yeah,
world has
I
so
agree.
Many problems, and we've got 7 billion people to solve those problems. But most of us learned in a way where that was passive. We were learning problems that came off a worksheet, and they weren't framed in the right way. You need to solve an algebra problem. You need to be able to identify key benchmarks in history. You need to be able to write an essay that has a strong beginning, examples, and then a conclusion. Those things are okay, but they didn't in themselves, they didn't help those 7 billion people identify which problems are important to them so that they could really pursue it.
Yeah.
And we have the resources. We have those people and that creativity. And the more we give them autonomy and foster creativity and collaboration, the faster we'll solve these problems that we're in today, the political and environmental.
I don't know. Well, you think the world's full of political and environmental problems today? How odd. I don't see that. I'm just kidding. Okay, Nathan, what are your thoughts on that? What we lost over the course of time. And you saw this when you were a teacher. You saw it.
So one of my favorite books of the last decade is Drive by Daniel Pink, he identifies, you know, what motivates us as human beings, and really comes down to three kind of big things, which is purpose, autonomy, and mastery. And I think what looking through any of those three lens, it's hard to do any of those really well inside of an isolated, siloed subject classroom. Which is really what the conventional paradigm, especially at the middle high school level, has perpetuated. So when we talk today about what our goals are around creativity and critical thinking and being engaged citizens and having these wellness and health metrics that we care a lot about, it is so misaligned with that conventional spatial paradigm. And so when we actually get a chance to talk with local school communities around what you want and then align that with the environments that are going to support that, we absolutely see, oh, yeah, we need that, and it's not even close. So you asked the question earlier about our communities, our educators, our school leaders aware of this? I think they're starting to become aware of this, and that the time that we get to actually engage with them, we really accelerate and illuminate the need to move beyond this this paradigm.
Absolutely.
Paradigm.
And, and the fact that Fielding International, an architectural firm, if I may, okay, is also an expert in education. Yeah, they brought on people like you, Nathan, okay, and Jill, et cetera, who really get down to the nitty-gritty of learning, okay, and understand it. And that is the difference. And they need to teach this. Okay, A, to administrators when they become administrators, and B, to work with school boards to understand this, okay? Because it's not just the prettiness of a building, it's the way that whole learning, it's the way people learn within an environment. Always interesting. I love having you guys on. I got to tell you, this is just a great partnership we got here. Thank you, Randy. Thank you, Nathan. You guys are terrific. What can I say? Just enjoy
great
Minnesota.
To be here, Larry.
It's almost spring, so good luck to the twins.
Thanks, Larry.
Okay? Be good, guys. Thank you both. Thank you.
Take care.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye. Okay. That's Randy Fielding from Fielding International, Nathan Stringy, who is the title is Senior Learning Designer at Fielding International. Okay, and it's just a great company. I have all this stuff linked over on the website here. Please check it all out. We're going to archive at ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.